George Cousins, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Cousins?
In Paddington, just off the main Edgware Road. My first recollection of life was...
what was the date?
Oh, sorry. That was the 20th of June, 1916. We moved over to the Wilsdon side of Kilburn Park Road, the other side of the road being in the Paddington boundary. As I was interested in everything, like cricket and football, of course, I wanted to go to school with my friends to St.
Now, what about your father? What did your father
do? Oh, sorry. My father was on the railway. He drove the first on the Great on the Great Western Railway. To my knowledge, he drove the first motorised vehicle for them, because he was on horses, of course, in those days. And then this was 1916, the middle of the big war. He was a specialist and didn't get fortunately called up, but he then drove vehicles, taught other people to drive vehicles for the Great Western Railway. My mother was in dressmaking, but like most women at that time, once she married, she finished work. We moved over to Kilburn Park Road. I was about 3 years of age, when I started to remember things.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one sister who came along 7 years later, Joan, and I eventually went to the local school, which was called Kilburn Park Infant School.
What kind of an education did you get?
Normal, it was... not grammar school, it was the one below. anyway, normal education for the time, up to the age of 14 years.
Did you enjoy school?
I enjoyed school because I was exceptionally good at cricket, so I got into the senior team at the age of 10, and played with boys of 14, got several medals, won several cricket bats, played at Lords, representing the Wilsdon, played for Wilsdon, of course, captain Wilsdon schoolboys, then was selected, played at Lords, which I remember very well, against the public schools.
What was that game like? You were a batsman, weren't you?
I was an all-rounder. I was in it for the fact that I could bat and bowl as a young man. And in fact, that was when I first met Dennis Compton, who we were 14 and a half, he was 12 and a half. But you could see the potential of a young man like that then. But anyway, I mean, the thunderstorm came, which I well remember. And
what was the atmosphere like at the bench?
Marvellous, because naturally the whole of my school were there, because I was the first chap from my school that ever represented London schoolboys. I got the very nice red and white cap and the blazer and all that. And the atmosphere, as you say, was excellent. There was the whole ground, the whole of Lords was filled. It was like playing in a test match, of course. But unfortunately, late in the afternoon, the heavy rain came, and I took a couple of wickets, a couple of catches. Went in, I think, at number five, got a few runs. In trotted Dennis Compton, batted with me, then showed his style of being the only chap in our team that knew anything about spin bowling, etc., and break bowling, and played through his innings at 34 not out, and then the rain came. But I know next year he captained the side and then scored a century, which in his memoirs he puts as the first time he played at Lords. But it just happens that I played with him at that age, and he got 34 not out at Lords. But that was then. I continued playing cricket for junior sides. I played for Meeson's, the Chocolate People, and then Paddington. I tried to play for Neasden, but didn't get through to play for them. So I went and played for Paddington. Then I played for a team called the Early Birds, who were a gentleman's team. And by reason of the fact that they were Early Birds, they were in the early days of the 18. They played in the morning from 6 o'clock till 9 o'clock, went on their duties as butlers, etc. And 1 o'clock they went back and played again, that sort of thing. But that was in those days. But anyway, I played for them for many years until the war came along.
But that was your main hobby?
Yes. I would turn out for cricket. I had 14 days holiday, and my name was down with a cricket club conference, and I would get 14 matches to play in, and that was my life, cricket. And, of course, going to evening classes.
I'll come to that. What about any other sports? Did you play football? Or?
I played meagre football, but not terribly. I was in the team, but never had my heart in football. I did a bit of swimming, but never had my heart in that. I was just cricket mad, and because probably I wanted in fact to play for Middlesex, but not having the background at that time, I couldn't get in, and there was no trials for Surrey and things like that. But anyway, so all I did was play amateur cricket as often as I could right through my life.
When you left school at 14?
I left, well, at 15, 14 and three quarter, 15 I was, actually.
And had you started your evening classes while you were at school, or did you start them when you'd left?
I started evening classes while I was at school.
And what were you doing?
When I started, I was doing English, mathematics, all the Royal Society of Arts things, as they were, and I got the usual diplomas, etc., etc., as many as I could, naturally, because I went up for several jobs into town, one to be a dentist assistant, but he wanted to see my matriculation, which, of course, in those days was the password to everything, like the A-levels, and I had no matriculation, but all I could produce was...
Why not? Have you just not taken it?
I hadn't taken my matriculation. It wasn't. It was frowned on at our type of school. That was it. I didn't get to grammar school, unfortunately. I didn't. I passed the what we called the 11 plus, even in those days. But there was 10 of us passed, and only two were accepted to go on to the next to the grammar school.
So, what work did you take, or how did you get into work?
How I got into work was I applied for a job locally in Willesden, Queen's Park, in fact. Became assistant at the age of 16 to an estate agent and builder, who, in fact, when I first saw him, he said, "Now, do you want to be a plumber or do you want to be a clerk?" And I said, "Well, I'm not particularly keen on the heavy work, pushing a barrow around, etc., etc." I said, "I'd sooner be a clerk." And I said, I can write, or I am doing shorthand as well, and I'm doing all the clerical work. Bookkeeping, of course, and those sort of things, which all came in handy in later life, but that was that. So he said, "Oh, well, I'll pay you 12 and 6 a week." And I worked there, going home. We'd moved up to Bromsbury, and my uncle... who was a man of property, lost his wife, so he had asthma, came to live with us, and eventually left the house to my mother, etc., etc., in Bromsbury, and that's where we lived until, I continued playing cricket until the war came.
Now, what was your job as clerk at the estate? Give us a flavour.
Answering the phone, interviewing... clients, taking details of local properties, inspecting local properties, being a normal estate agent, I think to the age of 17. But in the meanwhile, my governor was very friendly with a man named Horace Hewlett, who was a chartered surveyor with many offices, And he used to be friendly to me. He talked to me and he said, "Well, you're wasting your life here, George, etc., etc." He said, if Arthur Jones will release you, come up to me." And at the age of 19, I went to Baker Street and I joined his office to train as a surveyor and general, to begin with, general dog's body, filing clerk, etc., etc., typing, but mixing with the sons of the, what I call the elite. 10 of us down in the basement, all smoked, not me, I never smoked all my life, but all the other chaps was down there smoking, but they were doing the drawings. I used to go out with the architect and the surveyor, and I learnt an awful lot from the age of 19 to 23 in that. But I didn't start taking, I started thinking about the exams, and then the war came.
During the 1930s, had you been aware of what was going on in Germany?
Oh, yes, very much so, yes.
How did you know, and what did you feel about it? I mean, I know you're only a young lad, but I mean...
Well, I mean, my father was naturally a typical Labour man. I had no real leanings to anything at that time, but my governor, of course, was conservative. In my office life, I became to talk reasonably well and better than I was born to talk, and lost my Cockney expressions and things like that, and in later life, which all helped me. But that was it. But as far as thinking about things, no television, of course. My father was an entertainer on the railway. He all he did was get me to take shorthand notes of all the comic songs off the records, which he would then sing. I used to learn them as well, and I wasn't one to be an entertainer, so he did the entertaining. We had the radio, and that was that. And that, but all I listened to was and heard. About the Spanish war at the time, and it never entered into our lives as young men. All I was interested in was going to cricket on Saturday and Sunday, and playing cricket, and meeting people all over the place and enjoying my cricket. And that was my life before the war. My sister had a lot of younger friends, 7 years younger, who used to sit on my lap while I crooned to them. In the days when little girls could sit on men on young men's laps and be crooned to, but that was my life as I remember it in those days. Until the sudden knowing, I mean, we all remember the day the war broke out, sort
what
of thing.
Do you remember of it, the 3rd of September?
Well,
did you hear the announcement?
The 3rd of September, yes, naturally we all listened. We heard the announcement. My mother was very shocked because she'd lost brothers father in the previous war, etc., etc. And as women did, they immediately thought, "Well, you're going to get called up soon, old man." So that was that. But anyway, all we heard was the siren go, which went immediately, and we wondered what the hell that meant. But it was only this first siren that went, and then of course we had no more siren or nothing for what. Through the Cold War for 5 or 6 months. But in the meantime, I got my calling up papers in December. My governor...
Now, before that, had there been had the war affected your lives much in that first couple of months before December?
Yes. It affected my life in as much as my governor said, he'd been a major in the previous war, but he said, "We can't keep all staff on." So he said, "I'm sorry." He says, "I've got to put you off, and I'm only keeping one man out of 10. And that was, we were all training, but we all got put off in September, made redundant, in other words. So the first thing I did was, my mother said, "Well, look, you're going to be called up in December." She applied for the RAF up in Cavendish Square. RAF said, looked at my papers, looked at my background, and said, "Oh well," he said, "look, you'll be in the next lot called up. you take your chance where you're called to. You can go in the Navy. I said, I don't want to go in the Navy. He said, well, you can't. In those days, you couldn't select. So, if I'd have been a flyer, if I'd have been a pilot, I'd have gone into the RAF straight away. One or two of my colleagues had been able to even fly machines, and they went straight into the RAF. At that time, I could only ride a bicycle. I had no car. You didn't have cars when you were before the war, not in my state. And I had friends who had cars who took me to cricket, etc., etc. And that was that. I had one or two girlfriends, of course, which never resulted. And in those days, I hate to say it, but we did respect girls more. I used to like. That's why I went to evening classes for 7 years. I went to Priory Park, to the college there, in Priory Park Road, which was the Willesden College, and there I took. I used to go there just to do as much as I could mentally, but.
Now, before we go on, because we haven't really emphasised it, but you were very good at shorthand, weren't you? And this comes into the story later, so can you tell us about shorthand and why you learnt it and what system? It's all one system, I think. But
it's Pitman's, yes. It's not Greg's, it's Pitman's. Well, a friend of mine who lived in our house, because we made it into three flats, and he wrote, it's what started me. I was going to learn Greg because he was a journalist, and he wrote Greg shorthand at 250 words a minute, which was the fastest that anyone could ever write it. But you couldn't write Pitman's. You could write Pitman's at 200 words a minute. But anyway, he said, look, when you go into these evening classes, George, he said, as far as your works, later works, concerned, you'll pay. He said, if you go into journalism, even in surveying, taking notes, et cetera, at lectures, it's very handy. So that's why I started. I started taking shorthand at the age of 15, and I did Pitman's shorthand right to the age of 22. I got all the degree, all the usual things, and I went to do a bit of typing, of course, which was handy, and touch typing I learned, which was very useful. But that was that, which all came to, as you'll hear, probably saved my life.
We will come to that. Right, now, tell us about your call-up in December. How was the call-up?
There was one small thing when you said about games. I was a snooker fanatic because my governor was a friend of Joe Davis, the great snooker player, as we called him. And Joe and I used to come to our office because he was in... And anyway, I used to go to my governor's office. His son was my age. And that's why he accepted me as a son later when his son was killed. And I used to go to his office in Barnet and play on their snooker table and meet Joe Davis and things like that. But when I used to come from evening classes, I might take a girl home, just see her at the door, straight down to Burton's in High Street, snooker hall above the table, and played snooker.
The snooker halls had quite a bad reputation then, didn't
they? They did. And my mother, she didn't mind me taking girls home, but she used to want to know where I was from 9 o'clock till 10:30, and I'd been taking so-and-so home. She didn't mind that. But my father used to pop in the snooker hall occasionally and see me there, and he never reported to my mother about this, but he wasn't very happy.
What were they like, snooker halls, then? Because people talk about them, but, I mean...
Well... They had a bit of the tough. They had the tough element of life there. I played with young men my own age, and except as we called the Barker, who ran it. He was the man that ran the snooker hall. He was the semi-pro. He was the man that I played for because I was good, and he played for me for a shilling a time, gave me a couple of blacks, and I often beat him. So that was it. Was the No drugs, never any sign of, never knew anything about drugs in those days. It's wonderful, really, that,
About drink?
I drank cricket, yes. But in those days, I even had not a marvellous bladder, but all my life, a dicky one, but I used to like my pint, but only a pint, and that was it. Never spirits, couldn't afford them.
So the snooker halls to you, you went to play snooker, is it? You weren't hanging out with a rough crowd.
There was lots of young men there. I mean, if they downgrade snooker, I mean, that's a terrible thing. I mean, this is beside the point, but I go to the Methodist church.
There was a rough element there, but basically...
There were 30 tables, and the rough element were the good players who would invite you to play for shillings a time, naturally, but you were wary. You played them, but you didn't always win. It wasn't profitable. But I had another friend who was also an excellent snooker player. I mean, I always look at them on television now, and I think, God, if I'd have only had the chance when it was in colour now... We were in black and white. That's one thing. I was probably the only person that was able to mark for Joe Davis. My governor opened in Chippenham, Kilburn, a billiard halls over markets. And Joe Davis and Horace Lindham, that was Walter Lindham's nephew, came over and played with him, and my governor used to call me in and say, well, you know all about snooker, George. I said, well, yes. He said, you can mark for them. And I had the honour, it was in 1938-39, of going and playing. They played three demonstration games, and I marked for them, things like that, you know.
Yeah, were you interested in billiards as well? Because billiards was more popular then.
Billiards I played, naturally. I played, because I had a billiard table at home, a small one, actually. And you played billiards, I played with my father a lot. But billiards was not the game you really kept up with. And
snooker was the big thing.
But snooker became, pool was never introduced to us in this country. And...
Okay, now let's get on to, in December, you were called up. Now, did you have to attest first? I mean, what was the whole procedure of being called up? Do you remember how you got into the army?
Oh, very much. Well, the usual thing was, you got your papers to call on a certain day at a certain barracks. I think I went to St. John's Wood. Anyway, we went in there, medical boys all the way around with the different... about six medical officers, or obviously they were top doctors, and you went through them like a dose of sorts, hearing, you know, everything, all the taps, all the knocks, all that, first class, no troubles, and fortunately, I mean, I was perfect condition, so straight away, next thing I knew was I got a letter, report would it have been St Pancras or King's Cross, to catch the so-and-so train to Troon in Scotland. So I got up there, went naturally with my civvies I had on, and I went to Troon. Fortunately, on the way, meeting a chap in my same compartment who was going there as well. So that was one friend to start with. We went to, and that's where I did my...
Who were you joining in Troon?
No one in particular. Just being trained as an infantry soldier. Ockingate Camp. Same as the general. Ockingate. Next to a Troon was down the road. We were in the district of Ayrshire, of course, we went to Glasgow. And that's right. Oh, it's Glasgow. You went to Glasgow, then you got a change of train down to Troon.
And who was running it? Which regiment was sort of running it overall?
Probably the Highland Light Infantry.
Was it their depot? Or?
It wasn't. Not to my knowledge. It was a training depot only with no barracks. It was normal huts. It was just on the very we could look out and see the large island. There were the golf courses all along there, but we weren't allowed to go onto them. But it was very nice, except that arriving there in the 1st of January 1940, we went into the Scotch Mist, or the Scots, the Mist, Mistral as they called it, and for 3 months, that was what we saw.
Now, how did they receive you when you arrived on the 1st of January?
Well, it was wet, it was pouring with rain. A whole lot of us were told to march, or not march, to walk to a hut. We were all delegated a bed, etc., etc. I'm told next morning to get to bed, next morning to report round to the depot for clothing, etc., etc.
What kit, clothing and uniform and kit did you get?
Ordinary khaki jacket, trousers.
Battle dress.
Battle dress, as it was called then, of course. And that was all we got to begin with. And then, of course, subsequently, we started rifle firing, bearing gun firing.
So what about the huts? What were the huts like?
Well, you had the central boiler, which was a coke boiler or whatever they boiled. I mean, it wasn't a coal boiler, it was a coke boiler. It was warm enough. It was pleasant up to a point, but being Scotland and being Mistral, never any sun, it was always a bit damp, and there was condensation, of course, running down the walls on and things like that. But I was one that always had two pairs of socks on in my boots and had enough sense to look after my feet.
Now, what about the bed area? What was your bit of the hut, so to speak?
A normal bed with... we didn't have palliasses. We had a couple of mattress, and I think 3 blankets we were given. No sheets, of course. Most of us had taken our pyjamas, and we were fortunately in those days allowed to wear the pyjamas, so it wasn't too bad against they were normal army blankets. No sheets, of course, but that was life.
Did you have any cupboards or anything?
Oh, yes. We had the normal, like as if you were in a hospital, the normal cupboard at the side for your glasses or water. You had a key to lock it, which you did, but not that that really helped, because I think every key from everyone fitted every lock person.
Did you have to keep the room? Were you taught to keep the room clean?
Oh, yes. We had a sergeant. We had a corporal down the end in an annex, and then... the usual morning sergeant on parade, 6 o'clock, Valley. Dress quickly and out the front.
You didn't tidy the hut in the morning?
No, we were allowed to go and get breakfast. A wash, that's right. Ablutions. Round outside the ablutions. Got ourselves clean up to a point. Mainly cold water, of course, in those days. And then down to the cookhouse.
Now, what was the food like? Because that's your first experience of army food.
Well, being in Scotland, it wasn't to my... See, we were half Cockneys and half Scots from Glasgow. But most of us were from London, which was quite good enough, because we had a good mix. But we didn't like the porridge unless we had sugar. They wouldn't give us sugar, so we ate the porridge, but we couldn't eat porridge with salt, and that was it. The Scots boys, it was lovely, but that was it. But we had normal thick bread and butter. We had the usual meals, lunch meals, or we called it dinner, of course, and...